Hi, I'm Ryan Dodge-Cook, and this is Summit to Talk About, your one-stop podcast for all things hiking, hills, wild camping, and the great outdoors. We have reached episode 10 of series 4, which is the finale, as we take a short, and I do mean short break, to recuperate and plan for series 5. As always, we aim to please and we'll be going through the many great connections that we've made over the last few months and scheduling new episodes. For those of you who have just discovered Summit to Talk About, welcome aboard, and I hope you enjoy ploughing through the back catalogue from all four series. I hope you're making the most of the longer and slightly warmer days and getting outside in the evenings. Start discovering what's on your doorstep and beyond by downloading the Hiker app. Hiker should be your go-to app for planning and navigating your outdoor adventures. With over 25,000 preloaded trails, the ability to plot your own routes, record your adventures, and download maps for offline use for absolutely free. Zilch. Nada. See the link in the show notes to download now and start exploring straight away from your fingertips. In this episode, Claire and I were invited to a very special venue, The Beast, an ex-Belgian Army Volvo truck, which is now the permanent home on wheels to Jackie, Mark, and their four Cavapoos. They live full-time van life and have travelled all across Europe, so I hope you enjoy listening to their story so far. Right, so let's start by first of all introducing you guys and saying thank you very much for us to invite us into your home. It's weird saying that, isn't it?
It is, I think.
But first of all, we've got Jackie.
Hello.
And we've got Mark, and they both live on the road. Van life extraordinaires, I would say. But looking at this van, it's not your typical transit van. So what exactly is this that we're sat in?
We're sitting in a Volvo N10, which is a large ex-military lorry, which we bought from the Belgian Army. It's a bit of a European project, really, because it's a Swedish lorry purchased from the Belgian Army, brought back on Austrian plates, and now in the UK road registered and converted into, the manor house of motorhomes. The box itself is about 7 metres long. It's tall enough to accommodate my husband, who's 6'6" tall, and it's about 2.5 metres wide, so it makes for a very comfortable living space.
Definitely does. And I mean, I've seen van conversions in the past, you know, your typical transits or your smaller ones. You know, you can do it in any van, really, can't you? Car conversion if you wanted to. But this is next level. I mean, I've been in caravans, I've been in actual motorhomes, but it's got way more character than a normal motorhome. And I suppose you've designed it to exactly how you wanted it.
Exactly. We gave up work to travel in 2016, and we were initially in a caravan, which was very, very comfortable. But it also gave us some idea of what we needed, what we didn't need, what layout we wanted, and so on and so forth. We bought the truck because we actually wanted to go further afield, and we felt that the caravan probably wouldn't make it across the Gobi Desert because we had Mongolia in our sights. So Mongolia being a country about 3 times the size of France with only 3 paved roads, so we thought we'd need something that was a little bit more up to the job. So that's why we bought the truck with that intention. But as far as the conversion went, then we did it all ourselves with the help of friends. Obviously we got professionals in to do the electrics and the gas, but all the woodworking we did ourselves with the help of a friend of ours who has a lot more carpentry skills and tools than we have. And basically the layout is just exactly what we wanted.
So
we've got in the back, we've got, it's bigger than a Super King size bed,
and then it's massive.
It is massive.
And accommodates your furry friends as
it
well.
It accommodates the four furry friends who we travel with. So we travel with Kai, Rosie, Ruby and Lani, who are four Cavapoos, which is a Cavalier Poodle cross. So they're lovely travel companions. So yes, the bed is big enough to accommodate all of us. And then underneath, we do a lot of sports. So we carry with us two paddle boards, which actually the armrests of the sofa are built around our paddle boards because they're 12 feet long. So we slide them up the sides of the truck from the garage in there. And then we've got several windsurf boards, all our windsurf sails, two bikes, and all our skis because we're in the winter we do snow sports, so we've got four sets of skis and that's all underneath.
So it's like an outdoor activity centre on wheels.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. With the luxury.
One pair of which is our tail room.
Brilliant. That. I love how you've done that. Just so that people know what we're talking about, there's a pair of skis there which are doubling up as a towel rail. So fantastic.
You've literally thought of everything. Yep. Every kind of nook and cranny there is, you've just used it. You've optimised the space really well with character as well. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite of the conventional grey and sort of maroon.
It's definitely not grey and marine in here. We kind of went the opposite of that.
I love it. It's the amount of storage you've got in here as well. I think you've probably got more storage than I've got in my house.
Really?
Yeah. And I live in a terrace house, a Victorian terrace, and they just don't come with storage.
No.
So I would say you've got more storage space than I have in my house.
Yeah. Well, it's the key to living in small spaces, I think, is like you said, Claire, is using every little bit of space that you've got, multi-purposing things. I mean, we love to multi-purpose things. So actually the skis on the wall there, I mean, besides being a display and a feature, they are a towel rail as well, but then it's a place to store them so they're not underneath a chair or something.
And they look cool as well.
Yeah,
and
we really can cool.
store something else there.
Yeah.
But the colour scheme in here, we went for a kind of underwater theme. So our walls are an aquamarine blue and then our cupboards are sort of orange and yellow in sort of coral tones, which probably sounds horrendous.
It doesn't look it, though.
It doesn't. But it looks amazing.
We like it. And it was kind of a reaction, as Mark says, our caravan was designed to offend no one. It was kind of white and beige.
Yeah.
So we've kind of gone for the opposite of that because color just makes me happy. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
And that adds to how light it is in here. And we were saying that just before we hit the record button, but there's no actual lights on in here as we speak, and it is so well lit, isn't it? We've got, I can't count the amount of windows we've got in here. We've got loads of double glazed windows, and these roof lights that you've had put in here just really bring the light in, and I think that it's just amazing. It really is. I love it.
If we park on a beach or in a national park or something, then the back doors open as well.
So, oh, do they?
They've got bubbly at the back, so we've been parked on beaches in the Balkans on the coast there, sort of literally on the shore, and open the back doors, and we virtually hang our feet in the water from the bit of the back door.
And seeing the stars as well from the lights.
That's right. No, it was one of it was something that was important to both of us, was to have the light. I mean, before we hit record, as you say, we were discussing the light in here, and a lot of overland trucks have very small windows for security purposes and so forth, but it was something that I really wanted. We live in this full time, and if it was like a dark pokey space, I really wouldn't like it. So yeah, we've gone to town on the windows. I mean, they are sort of security windows, they're metal framed, double glazed and so on. So they are secure, or as secure as a window can be, but they do bring in the light.
And the other thing with full-time van life is not so much for the lorries, because you can't really go under the radar in this, but I mean, a lot of the van lifers don't put very many windows in it, or maybe no windows at all, so they can park up in wild places and they just
be as stealth as possible.
They can be under the radar. So.
Like you say, it's not as much as it is army green in camouflage in that sense. You can tell that somebody lives in it.
You'd be surprised how people just don't see us, though, because of the camouflage. I mean, obviously, if we're parked on a street or in a pub, we stand out. But we park in forests and places like that, and it's amazing how invisible we are even in a vehicle of this size. We just, people don't see us until almost they walk into us.
It's quite a shock, isn't it, to suddenly see you right in front of you.
Oh no, it is, because I mean, we're 4 metres tall, aren't we? 10 metres long in total and 2.5 metres wide, so it's not a petite camper van by any stretch.
And does that come with any different sort of licensing requirements or anything?
You need an LGV license, category C, so what used to be a class 2. So we were
And do you both drive, or
we do?
Wow. Okay. Very good.
No, I think it's very important. I always say this to ladies who motorhome and caravan. It's very important that both of you can drive. For example, if we'd not both been able to drive our caravan, we would have been stuck in Budapest for 6 weeks because Mark broke his ribs. He fell on the edge of a box and broke a rib. And I mean, he could barely breathe, never mind drive. So I then had to drive the caravan across 3 countries. And I mean, literally, you can be stuck even if your partner is, you know, the only driver. You know, if he's unwell or, you know, sort of twists an ankle or anything like that, it can be a real problem. Or even just, I think, sharing the driving. I mean, we tend, when we're in places that we want to be, we tend only to drive in short hops. You know, we'll maybe drive 20 or 30 kilometres to the next sort of place that we want to see. But, you know, if you do a long drive at any time, then you can, of course, share the driving, which is much safer and
I mean, that's one of the first things people ask us about is, a bit that doesn't do many to the gallon, but we don't hop around. We don't, I mean, it's not a sort of a shuttling around and a cruising vehicle. It's our house on wheels, and we drive it. I mean, a normal sort of routine for us is to drive it 50 to 100 miles maybe, and then we'll stop for a week. We'll drive it 50 to we've got electric bikes, and then, you know, inside the truck underneath the bed, so, you know, any pottering about or shopping, we've got a dog trailer, so we can do the shopping in there.
Oh, that's it. Like you just said there, this is your home. So first and foremost, this is a home.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're in your house, you don't feel the need to travel all that much. But you have that beauty that you can do that. So,
I mean, we have been carbon shamed by a couple of people, not many, but I always sort of turn it around and say our even though we do 9 to the gallon for anyone that's asking, but I'll wager that nobody that lives in a house gets even close to our low carbon footprint. I mean, the whole roof, which isn't glass, is solar panels. We never plug in. We've got all our heating is LPG. And I've just filled it up, actually, so that's 2 months worth, and that cost me £35. So 2 months worth, that's all our hot water, all our heating, and all our cooking. So 2 months, that's cost us £35.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
As I say, all our electricity is free. It's from the sun. We never need to plug in.
So as sustainable as you can be as well.
All our water as well. I mean, in terms of sort of water sustainability, I must admit, even when I go in a house now, I never leave the tap running. I mean, we just... You carry the water. I mean, we've got a lot of water on board, but we still make sure it lasts. So, you know, brushing your teeth, you wet the brush and the tap goes immediately off and you brush your teeth. So we're
I suppose that's not almost like subconscious now. You just do that and it's become habit. I mean,
Well, it is. It becomes a way of life, because every drop of water that you have to collect yourself. It's not on mains. And every amount of waste that you produce, you also have to get rid of.
Well, society makes you so wasteful.
Yeah.
So wasteful.
Yeah.
You know, people don't even think about it because everything is easy. I mean, with this lifestyle, nothing is easy, you know. The toilet, which is always a point of conversation for van lifers and things, but you know, they all come with, you've got to deal with them. So you know, you need solutions for every sort of basic task. You know, you've got to get rid of your grey water, you've got to get rid of your toilet waste, you've got to find somewhere to fill up with fresh water on board. So
are these things that you can look into before you move to a place to stop? Or do you just get there and think, right, how do we sort of navigate?
We're very fortunate with the size of the vehicle in that we carry a lot of water. We got enough water to last us 6 weeks.
We've got,
we've got 1,200 litres of water on board because we don't need to worry about weight. It's a 26-tonne lorry and it weighs 16 tonnes as it stands. So even with all that water on board, we've got 10 tonnes unused. People that travel in the conventional off-the-shelf motos, and I mean, our caravan had a payload of about 140 kilos. And I mean, every time we travelled somewhere, we had to empty everything out of it.
Yeah.
We used to travel with a van and a caravan, just because we carried all the sports gear and there's no way that a conventional vehicle could fit it all in. So the van was our toy box, and the caravan was what we lived in. But when we moved, we had to empty all the pots and pans, plates, everything that was heavy, we had to empty it out to travel.
Yeah.
It was a right pain in the arse. So.
Yeah.
So, we reckon we're off-grid for about, we've got all the solar. Even in the weekend where it was grey skies and rain, our batteries were still 100%. We're always fully charged. We've got 1,300 watts of solar on the roof. We've got a 500 amp hour lithium battery on board, so
that's brilliant.
I mean, even if we had, even if it stayed nighttime for 6 days, I think our battery would probably last 6 days without any sunshine into it. So,
and that makes it a lot easier for you in terms of if you are travelling about and looking for somewhere to stay. So, at the minute, we're in the car park of a pub in the local area, and. I suppose if you were going to some places where you felt the need to sort of have to really sort of grovel or ask really nicely to plug in, sometimes that can get awkward and they might say no, whereas you can say, look, we're going to be no problem. We're completely self-sufficient. We just need a space in your car park. And that makes it a lot easier for you, I guess.
It's true to a degree, although most people are really nice and helpful.
Yeah.
You know, I must be in the UK, I kind of expected it to be more difficult. The lifestyle that we were living and the travelling and the finding places to stop and stuff. And, you know, we've been travelling in the lorry for 2 years, hardly been on a campsite. And we use a lot of pubs and things because when we're in the UK, because we like British beer. So when we're out of the UK, that's one thing we miss.
Stumbling distance.
Make sure we made the most of it. People are generally nice. I mean, when all the pubs we've stopped in, if we have in the past needed just to top up the batteries or fill up with water or whatever we've needed to do, people are just always very helpful and very nice.
Do you think that in some way that's because of the van that you're in?
Partly, I think,
because it is spectacular, I think, is the best word to describe it.
It's definitely a conversation starter.
Yeah.
I think with our... with our park-ups particularly, I think we get away with a lot more than a conventional, white motorhome or caravan that just stands out like a sore thumb. Even though we're three times the size, I think we take up 5 parking spaces. So I know that from when we do it, because we always take it in the Tesco's or Sainsbury's or wherever we go shopping. And, I mean, it's always fine. So I know we take up 5 spaces. But I think they stand out a mile and... I can't remember who it was that was. It was one of the Bear Grylls type people. I think was bemoaning all these horrible white caravans on the road and why they're not a nicer colour. But yeah, we don't stand out so much, and it's an interesting vehicle. And if people approach us, they generally just want to
have a look inside.
They want to know what it's all about and have a look at it. And we're always polite and helpful and open and nice to people. And you know, if we park up wild camp, we always do litter picks.
Well, on Saturday when we bumped into you on Saturday, how we first met, you did a litter pick then as well,
I think I've got 5 bin bags in that car park,
which is outrageous.
In one car park,
that there should not be that much rubbish.
The car park was clean. It was all the there was a little stream running through, and it was the grass bank and all the wild area down to the riverbank that was strewn with beer cans and all sorts of horrible stuff. But I've got 5 bin bags there. So we always leave places better than we find them. And most proper van life people, I mean, there are different types, but and I think in lockdown a lot of I don't know how to describe them, yuppies or people with people that kind of don't know the rules and maybe don't have the same respect for the outdoors don't didn't miss and maybe treat things properly in the way that proper van life travelling people do. Because everyone we know, and we know a lot of travelling people, don't we? And they all follow the same psyche as we have.
And that's the way to do it. Yeah. And it, you know, that's very similar in the camping community, and people, you know, there's a very small minority that leave a mess or...
Even walking and hiking, isn't
it? Yeah, it's the same, yeah. Anybody who leaves meth, they're a small minority, and the majority of people who go out and do it will not do that and leave no trace. But
I mean, you're in that, you're having the van life, you're going on your walks, you're doing your wild camping because you like the outdoors, you like the freedom of it. So the majority of the people aren't going to ruin what there is there.
No, that's right.
But it is a shame that people do ruin it for the vast majority.
But then again, on the other hand, there are the minority of people that kind of spot one failure. I mean, it's a bit like we've got four dogs now. I always, if I pass and there's a dog poop in the path or something that's not our dog's, I still pick it up because it's horrible. If somebody treads in it. So I'm sure there've been one or two occasions where we've missed one of our dogs through. We're very careful and we know the routine, and there's two sets of eyes sort of watching the dog, so we're pretty good with it. But on the other hand, you sort of can't sweat the small stuff, and if you see, I think there are a small minority of people looking on as well that kind of want to find fault as well a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, we often get blamed, don't we, because we have four dogs, or people see you in a van and go, oh, you've, you know, created all this litter, when actually, to be honest, it couldn't be further from the truth. You know, we're the opposite of that, you know, and as Mark has just said, you know, we try to leave places better than we found them. We try to be respectful and, you know, we are responsible dog owners.
Absolutely.
But whenever we walk, I mean, we've always done it ever since we had the dogs. I mean, our base now, although I'm from Lancashire, I was born and brought up in Blackburn. Our base now is in Bournemouth on the south coast, and we live near the beach, and we always used to take bags to litter pick on the beach. I mean, thankfully, things have improved.
We didn't need to take bags before the charge. Before the charge, there were always hundreds of bags on the
beach. You could always pick up your bag.
I mean, people thought that wouldn't make a difference, but I mean, it really that 5p, all of a sudden, we never found bags on the beach.
So it's working.
Definitely working. You know, but we always used to just take a bag and just clear the litter as we went. You know, I mean, if everybody did that, you know, it would make a huge impact, even if you just take one small bag. And we've always done that walking. I mean, very much as you say, you know, we love the outdoors. And, you know, it always really upsets me when you see people. Yeah, I mean, sometimes people do just, you know, like accidentally, maybe a crisp packet blows away or something. That can happen. But I always think if you can manage to take a bottle of Ribena up a mountain,
you could bring it back
empty.
How did this all start for you then? So you've obviously not lived in the truck for the whole entirety of your life. You mentioned having a caravan before that. When did you decide that we no longer want to go to work every day and do the 9 to 5 and
live in a house?
I don't want to live in a house anymore. I want to live... You know, I want to live full-time van life.
No.
The horror on your face is there when I mentioned the house.
The thought of living in a house. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I decided a long, long time ago that I wanted an alternative life. I mean, before Mark and I even met, I gave up my job when I hit 30 to go backpacking around Australia and New Zealand on the basis that, you know, if I wasn't going to do it now, then when? You know, so I've always kind of had it in the back of my mind that I wanted an alternative lifestyle. When Mark and I met, I mean, one of the passions that we share is travel. And during our working lives, I mean, we were fairly sort of thrifty about most things. You know, we never bought a big house. We didn't have big cars. But the one thing we never really scrimped on was holidays. And, you know, we always loved to get away. And it was a house rule that we always had to have another break or something booked, you know, before we came back from the other one because of what we lived for. So, I mean, we always had like various ideas. We came up with many ideas, didn't we, about you know, how we could sort of take our foot off the gas and escape the corporate world. And Yeah, really. It was. We always kind of had this vague. I mean, a lot of people have a vague 5-year rolling plan of like, in 5 years we'll give up work and do something different, and then you never quite get to that point.
It takes courage to make that leap.
It really does. Yeah. Well, we had that courage taken away from us, and basically we were both made redundant. So,
right, okay.
You know, we thought, oh my goodness, how on earth are we going to manage?
Well, it just brought it forward to us. Yeah. We were going to retire, and we were going to stop working at 55 when you can draw 25% of your pension tax free.
Right, so okay,
That was kind of the mark.
Yeah, but it happened a bit before that, so we just had to kind of work out, you know, while, you know, being made redundant didn't have opportunities stamped all over it, you know, we decided that we would try to make it work. I mean, it was terrifying because the both of us had always worked all our lives, you know, we'd always had an income. So it was very much stepping off a cliff. But then, I mean, I've always found that, you know, I mean, it's a little bit with, you know, like with travelling to various countries. I mean, for example, last year we went to Albania and everyone told us not to go. It was going to be terrible, awful, dreadful. We were going to get kidnapped or robbed or, you know, scammed or something. It was actually fine. And the Albanian people are lovely. We had a wonderful time. And I think, you know, very often, you know, like you only kind of hear the bad side of things.
Yeah.
And often everything you think about never comes true.
Well, the media only wants to give you bad news.
Exactly.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. But actually stepping off the treadmill was a lot less scary than we thought. I mean, the caravan came about. We often had like a vague idea. We windsurf. And in 2012, we went away with a windsurfing club called the Sea Vets, who are really the most inspiring people I've ever met in my life. They're all, I mean, the Sea Vets, you know, as it suggests, I mean, we brought down their average age by about 25 years when we joined, because they're all in their 80s.
Yeah.
They all windsurf. And we went on holiday with them, which isn't always necessarily a, you know, sort of normal thing to do. But, you know, when we got there, they were all on a beach in Brittany with their motorhomes and caravans saying, oh, you know, we've come from, you know, wherever, where we just like parked up on the beach and fell out of our caravan or motorhome into the water and windsurfed. And we sort of rubbed our chins and thought, that doesn't sound nice. Such a bad idea. So we kind of went out. I mean, we'd worked out already that our windsurfers wouldn't fit in a motorhome. There's no motorhome has a garage big enough for us to fit all our sports gear in. So we came to the conclusion that the only way that was going to happen was perhaps with a caravan towed by our van, which, as Mark said, is our toy box. So we just went out to look one day at a caravan. And by the end of the day, we had literally signed the dotted line. So we kind of accidentally bought the caravan.
I love that.
And then,
sounds like me.
Yeah, true.
It's the best way to be, because I sometimes think, you know, if you think of all the ins and outs, honestly, you'd never do anything.
There's never a right time, is there? You just sometimes have to do it.
Exactly. No, exactly. And then, I mean, we kind of celebrated, as you do when you've bought. We'd never had a caravan before, so we knew nothing about it. So we kind of celebrated with a bottle of champagne and got a little bit tiddly, and halfway down the bottle of champagne said, well, what if we kind of rented out the house and, you know, lived in the caravan? It will obviously be a much more low cost.
Escalating very quickly.
Yeah, it always escalated very quickly indeed. Yeah. And literally, when we sobered up in the morning, we thought, that seems
Actually, it's not jolly good.
Yeah. And within a month. We'd let the house, we'd sold most of what we owned on eBay.
That's liberating as well. I mean, we don't own anything apart from what's in this vehicle.
I love that.
You know what? I wish I could just do that.
I don't think you could.
Yeah. Well, it'd be nice afterwards. It's just doing it.
All the photos went up in flames.
Scanned them.
Oh, we scanned them.
And then burnt them.
Yeah.
So they're all on the computer. We have no photos. All the vinyl given away to a mate.
Wow.
The books, they were paid. Well, the vinyl and the books.
The vinyl and the books were both paid for. The books all went to charity.
Yeah.
Well, it's cliche, isn't it, when they say collect memories and not things, but you're doing that and you've still got things. You've got the things that you need.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's like the clothes. I mean, if you take out, I mean, we have skiing stuff and we have windsurfing wetsuits and things, but if you take those apart, I think we own about 12 kilos of clothes each.
Yeah.
That's it. And if we want a new piece of clothing, something has to go.
Yeah. One in, one out.
Profligate. Yeah. Sort of, I like that. And we'll add that to the thing because we only have so much space.
Yeah. Yeah.
We buy something when we need it and we wear things out now.
Yeah.
Just seems like such a, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but just a simple way of life that is so appealing.
Oh, it is. It's very uncluttered, and that is one of the appeals of it. You know, I really like owning less because you're not kind of worrying about, you know, loads of stuff that you don't know what to do with. I mean, a great metaphor for it was that Mark and I mean, we're coming up to our silver wedding, aren't we, darling? Which makes us sound very elderly.
Congratulations.
Yeah. But, you know, we've been married for 25 years and we owned this silver canteen of cutlery that we never used. We only ever saw it when we kind of moved house or cleared out a cupboard or something. But you could never get rid of it because it was a wedding present and it was worth quite a lot of money, or, you know, someone had paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
It cost quite a lot of money. That's very, a very good distinction. It wasn't worth a lot of money. And, you know, we brought ourselves to like sell it on eBay, and I think that's a great metaphor. You know, we had this thing and what it was worth was what someone was prepared to pay for it, which was nothing like what it meant to us was
we didn't have to cart it around.
Well, exactly. And you know, to be honest, I was delighted to see the back of it, you know, because you never used it.
It was
always too good to use, and then it wouldn't go in the dishwasher. It made your food taste funny because it was, you know, like silver plated and you know, it was just, you know, like a metaphor for all this stuff that you accumulate that you don't use, don't want, don't know what to do with. You know, and I mean, this is why I think storage is one of the booming businesses, isn't it, in the UK?
People have filled the garages,
they've filled the loft, and then they have to get a storage unit because they have this obscene amount of stuff.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
So,
you'll just feel so much better.
I'm glad my wife isn't really listening to this.
Well, it's a bit like your bag, isn't it? I know, like, when we go out for walks, if I take my small backpack, it's full. Yeah. If I take my big backpack,
Absolutely. It's
full.
Yeah, yeah.
So if there's space to put stuff, you'll have
you
stuff
always
and put it
do.
In it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's the handbag rule. I always quote that because I have a very small handbag for that very reason, because otherwise you just fill it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how big it is, it will always be filled. So.
Yeah. And it's the stuff, isn't it, that is a real source of stress in everyday life. If you think the amount of clothes that you have, that means it's a bigger pile of washing and ironing to do and drying.
Well, for me, choice. Yeah. I hate having choice. I'd rather just go, well, I've only got 3 T-shirts to choose from. So.
And 2 of them are dirty, so I'm going
to
wear that one.
Yeah, I'd love to be able to do that. I mean, the Italians have got a great way, the Digger Stazione. Yeah. I mean, you just go, I mean, for a Digger Stazione, you just go and they've been to the market. They've seen what is nice.
That's what you're having.
That's what they're cooking.
Yeah.
You go along and it's liberating. Because if you're a fussy eater, fine. But I mean, we'll eat anything. I'd rather just go along and, right, they've decided what looked good today. They've picked it. They've cooked for us. So,
That would be what I need. No stress.
Yeah. No, well, absolutely. But yeah, what you say is our life. It's not a case of, what am I going to wear today? It's like, is it hot? Do I need my shorts or my long trousers?
That's it,
you know, here's a couple of T-shirts. You know, I shall wear one of those. And that's that, you know. And there's, literally none of this agonising over what you're going to wear. Although I'm not sure we do fit into polite society always. You know, I mean, if we go anywhere posh, I have to choose, like, my best fleece.
That sounds like me anyway.
Happiest in outdoors clothes. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So when you got your caravan then, what was your plan from that point? So you got your caravan, you'd moved out of your house within a month. What was your plan then?
We've always got plans. We never follow them.
We went to France, didn't we? We just kind of decided that we would...
We got the caravan and we drove it a mile. That was our
first trip. That's true. The maiden voyage was a mile.
To where? Where did you go?
We bought it in Salisbury from...
Old Serum.
a dealer there, and we stayed at Old Sarum at a campsite. And I mean, that was quite comical because we drove in, we had it. I mean, it was a lovely caravan. It was second hand, but I mean, a bit like the truck, it had never been used.
Yeah.
So like we drove in with this lovely sparkling caravan that the dealer had polished to a high sheen. And the chap came out and said, "Hey, that's a nice van. How long have you been caravanning?" And we had to reply, "About 10 minutes. And I mean, literally we got it on the site. He sort of went, "Oh, okay, I'll help you." So he helped us to position it with it, which didn't require reversing. He sort of picked a pitch where we could just drive on and didn't have to go through all the shenanigans of reversing the thing. And then we couldn't even unhitch it. I mean, luckily, as Mark was,
all the gear and no idea,
we were totally, utterly, embarrassingly so. Yeah. And I mean, fortunately, as Mark says, you know, people are generally very kind and very helpful. And the chap wandered up and said, "Oh, my name's Granville." He said, "Are you having trouble?" And we kind of went, "Yeah." So he helped us unhitch and helped us. I mean, I think it took us about 5 hours, didn't it, to pitch the caravan the first time, because with a caravan you have to wind all the legs down and get it level. And I mean, that was a mystery that eluded us for months, wasn't it, leveling a caravan. We worked out later that the best thing to do is just put a glass of wine on the surface and have a look whether it's level. And I mean, we tried apps, we tried spirit levels, honestly, but a glass of wine is the best.
And then you know you've got something to look forward to once you've got all the legs down, but by
the time we'd had the caravan a few years, I must admit we had it down to a fine art. You know, we could pitch in about half an hour, something like that. So we did get better, but no, our first trip out was incompetent, to say
the
least.
Well, everybody has to start somewhere, don't they?
Exactly, and we had thrown ourselves in at the deep end. But as I say, you know, I mean, it's always worse. You know, you always think it's going to be worse than it was, and you know, it wasn't the end of the world. Someone helped us, and you know, after we'd done it that once, obviously we knew how to do it, so it was no problem.
Would you like a glass of wine or something?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yes.
So. Your first one 10 minutes down the road then, and was that it from that point onwards? You've sort of been living out and about ever since?
We usually spend most of the time out of the UK, but I mean, like last year we were out for a year and then we're back here for 12. I mean, we can't go back into the EU at the moment. We'll just say Brexit and we'll leave it there. But yeah, we're not allowed to go back into...
It's the Schengen area rather than the EU.
Yeah, the Schengen. Yeah. So, I mean, we've only got 3 months in the whole of Europe now since that fateful day. And then we've got to exit for 90 days in and 90 days out.
Is that
out.
How it works?
That's how it works. And the out now, at the moment, we've still got Romania and Bulgaria, but that'll probably be gone this year. Yeah. Croatia joined the Schengen area. That was already in the EU, but Croatia joined Schengen last year, so that's not an exit anymore. So there's the Balkans, which we travelled around for a year last year, so we kind of want to go somewhere different this year. So so all we got is Turkey, Moldova or Morocco now. The rest is Schengen.
Wow.
The joy of Schengen, yes.
Yeah, so, I didn't realise that those were the restrictions. That
90 days in, 90 days out.
Well, it's not quite as straightforward as that, because it's 90 days in a rolling 180-day period. So that does make it makes it a little bit more difficult to work out. It's not strictly 90 days in, 90 out.
Yeah, it's 90 in the last 180.
Yeah, it's 90 in the last 180. So you have to kind of count backwards and make sure that you've not overstayed, because the penalties for overstaying can be pretty severe.
I mean, if you overstay for a day... maybe a small fine. If you overstay substantially, you can get barred for 5 years.
Oh, really?
So it's not something, I mean, yes, they might not find out, but if they do find out,
the repercussions
are very serious.
Yeah.
So if you think that you wouldn't be allowed into Schengen again, and it would also be a black mark on your passport for other places. So if you overstayed and you were an illegal person in Schengen, you probably wouldn't be able to get into the States either. So you can't risk it.
Wow.
Can't risk it.
And I guess you don't need a plan, do you?
Oh, you need a plan, yeah. You can't change it if you don't make a plan. Yeah,
so. But once you've set,
we have a plan now. We're aiming for Turkey.
Right. Okay. But you don't.
What happens in between?
And it doesn't matter how long it takes. Or
No, we
might not get to Turkey, but you know, I mean, the lifestyle is about the journey, and I mean, that's the beauty of this lifestyle is the flexibility. Because if you just wake up one morning and think, oh, actually, I mean, we did that when we went to Romania in 2018. We were actually heading for Spain and Portugal, but there was a legendary heat wave that year and it got to 50 degrees and everyone was expiring, and we obviously we were heading south but decided to turn left, and then we went to Romania instead of Spain. But you can, you know, just decide to do that.
Yeah.
Or I mean, there have been times, you know, for example, on our German trip, the weather was fairly inclement, so I mean, we just kind of looked where the weather was good and headed there. So you know, you have that flexibility that, you know, you're not tied to a particular itinerary. You know, you can just do kind of what, you know, what you feel like doing. Or, you know, if you suddenly get a hankering to go to the mountains or go to the sea, I mean, with being windsurfers and skiers, you know, people often ask us, you know, like, which is your favourite? And I mean, I honestly couldn't really reply, because they both offer, you know, different, you know, kind of
mountains in the winter.
Well, we love skiing.
That works well, doesn't it?
Sounds good, yeah.
But we love walking in the mountains in the summer as well, you know, because,
well, we always go through mountains.
So, so, I mean, it's difficult to pick, but you can, you know, just kind of go where your whim takes you, really, which is really lovely. And unlike other kinds of houses, a house on wheels means if you don't like your neighbours.
That's true.
You can vacate. Yeah. So, not that that's really happened very much, has it?
I was going to say.
To be honest, I mean, neither of us, you know, we're not great lovers of city or crowds or, you know, like really popular places unless we go out of season. So we do tend to pick more out of the way places, to be honest. Yeah.
So where's your favourite place that you've been in this this particular
in
home?
This one
in the truck
in the truck yeah I'd say Montenegro is my favorite country. I love Montenegro. I mean, it was, I mean, we went to the coastline, as Jackie just said, out of season. Don't go to that coastline, the Croatia Montenegro coastline, in season. It'll be horrible. So we went there, we waited, we were in Bosnia and we were just counting down the time. Bosnia was lovely as well, really lovely people. I can't differentiate, that'll be taken the wrong way, but yeah, the Bosnian people were really lovely. So yeah, we waited there until September, and then went to the coastline. Kotor in Montenegro, stunning bay there. I mean, there's some nice parts of Croatia as well, but it's really commercial, and
it's
not really popular, hasn't it?
Whereas
Montenegro is kind of, it's not kind of got to, I'm sure it will get there, but it's not got to that stage yet. And then you've got all the national parks, and you've got the beautiful river canyons. You went rafting on one of the canyons.
Yeah, I won't say whitewater rafting, because the water levels, I think maybe you'd need to go about this time of year to, or maybe a little bit earlier in April. I think it would be quite exciting, but it was very, very beautiful.
It was a floating trip.
It was kind of a float with a few little boats.
Not like the Zambezi.
No, I sort of started my whitewater rafting. I mean, a little bit like, you know, I think it is perhaps how we live our lives a bit, because I went on a whitewater rafting trip in 1994. I'd never heard of whitewater rafting. I was sort of single at the time, and I just got the opportunity to go on this. It was called Rafting the Zambezi, the River of the Gods. And to me, like, a raft sounded like something like Contiki, you know, like a little wooden thing.
Something you made out of.
Yeah, that's it, made out of wood, floating down. Yeah, having a look at elephants. So, I mean, I didn't really think about it. I just thought it would be quite good fun and signed up for it. And then people came back to me and went, Jackie, did you know this is some of the biggest white water in the world? And I was like, no, it won't be, not where we're going, it'll be fine. You know, and then they were telling me about, you know, the hippopotami, you know, and they're the most dangerous animal in Africa, and the tropical diseases. I was like, no, it'll be fine where we're going. Of course. When I got to Harare Airport and saw the Zambezi Whitewater Spectacular on the television with rafts being hurled into the air and, you know, bodies dropping everywhere, you know, I was sort of thinking, oh, maybe that is where we're going. And, but it was too late to pull out. But that was seriously just one of the best holidays I've had. And I think that, you know, sort of really awoke my wanderlust.
Yeah.
And made me sort of think, you know, there's more to life than just work, eat, sleep, repeat.
Yeah.
Because we were doing like such exciting rafting. I mean, it is the biggest whitewater in the world. They don't call it the Slambezi for nothing, let me tell you. But we were just camping on the beaches next to the river under the stars. And I think it was the first time I really experienced living with very, very little, because obviously we did a 6-day descent of the river from Victoria Falls to Kariba. It was stunningly, stunningly beautiful, but all we could carry in the rafts was basically two sets of clothing. I had my wet clothing and my dry clothing, and that was that. But I've never been so happy or so fulfilled, because it was exciting, everything was different. You know, the beauty of nature was just outstanding. So, you know, it was something that made me think, you know, I really need to see a little bit more of the world. So, I mean, I'm so glad that that happened at, you know, like that age, and, you know, kind of really galvanised me into, you know, sort of thinking that, you know, it's not kind of owning stuff that makes me happy. Mm. It's not having things. It's having experiences.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's just reminded me. So you said about seeing more of the world, and you have done, haven't you? Because you've been to 6 of the 7 continents.
I have indeed, yes.
Wow, okay. So tell us about that.
Well, the whitewater rafting was what kind of sparked it off. That obviously ticked off Africa. I'm trying to think whether... Oh, no, before that, I probably had been to America, because I used to work for an American company. So, you know, I'd travelled there both for business and pleasure. I mean, luckily back in the day, you know, sort of business trips were rather less regimented than they might be these days. I think people are a bit more budget conscious, but I seem to remember my company taking me hot air ballooning over the Cascade Mountains.
Oh, wow.
Whitewater jet boating on the Rogue River and around San Francisco, all in the, you know, pursuit of business, as it were. But,
yeah, you don't get that anymore.
No,
you get £25 a night expenses. And they tell you not to spend it.
No, this is it. I think, you know, I was very fortunate that, you know, in back in the day, you know, they were a bit more flexible. And then the whitewater rafting has taken me to South America and to Nepal. So I rafted the Karnali River in Nepal, which is in the far west of Nepal. So, I mean, we flew into Kathmandu, which is where kind of everybody goes. That's up in the mountains. Nepal is kind of made of three layers, and the Karnali River is in the middle layer, which isn't the high mountains. It's sort of the rainforesty area. And then there's a lowland area as well. So we travelled for 2 days. I think we had to trek for 2 days with Sherpas to get to this river, which is just so remote. It's unbelievable. And then we rafted for, you know, sort of 6 days through the most beautiful unspoilt rainforest. It was absolutely gorgeous. And then having done the Zambezi and the Karnali, which some people call the Gnarly Karnali, because it is. I did an exploratory trip in Ecuador where we were actually rafting rivers that had never been rafted before. So it was a case of going over there and just having a look at like the watershed patterns, and then, you know, sort of going and seeing what happened, which was mainly a lot of bug bites, snakes. And it was one of those trips that it's kind of nice to look back on as a memory. But at the time it was, yeah, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So how many continents is that? I think I've done Asia,
I'm
Africa.
To go to,
yeah. No, I think
Australia,
that's... Oh, yeah, that was it. My backpacking trip, as I say, when I hit 30, you know, I was single. There's a bit, yeah, a bit of a sort of theme developing there. Still single. So I decided that I would jack in my job and go over to Australia and New Zealand and explore those environs. So I went to my boss and asked him for maternity leave, which he was rather perplexed about. He sort of said, "But Jackie, you haven't even got a boyfriend." And I sort of said, "Well, that's the beauty of it. So I want a year off work and then have my job back when I come back." And I think he was so taken aback that he actually said yes. So.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
So, yes, I went and explored Australia and New Zealand. So, yeah.
Wow.
So I think that's all my continents. I haven't done Antarctica yet, but
yes, I love that you've added yet onto the
end. Oh, there's always a yet. There's
always a yet. Yes, definitely. Yeah.
So where is on the bucket list then, even for both of you or individually?
I mean, there's countries that we really want to go to. Some of the Mongolia trip is a definite.
Eventually,
want to do it, but
yeah.
Things need to settle down in that sort of part of the world. We've got vague sort of plans. I mean, there's other places to see before we do it, but we've got vague plans to ship over maybe to Uruguay or something, and then maybe just travel around South America and maybe up through Central America into the States, possibly. But we haven't really researched that too much. Bucket list for me, apart from what we've mentioned, Japan. I desperately want to go to Japan, but at the moment we can't do that. If we can't take the dogs, we don't go. So that's kind of, not even thinking about that at the moment.
In the truck, of course.
It would be nice to. It's tricky getting that far over. I was researching getting over that far, but China is really difficult to get to. You can't... Number one, I don't think you can take more than one dog per person into China anyway. They're very,
it's full, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's be honest, China's pretty full.
So they don't like dogs, they don't accept dogs. Same as Iran, it's very difficult to travel through Iran with dogs. I think it's even, right. I think, I'm pretty sure I've read an article on it as well to corroborate what I heard, that you can't even walk your dog in Tehran.
Oh,
it's against the law to even walk your dog in Tehran.
Wow.
Muslim countries, the Muslim countries consider dogs like vermin. They like rats.
Right, okay.
And they're dirty animals.
Yeah.
I think it's changing slowly with the younger generation coming through, but it's not changed yet. But driving into China, very difficult. If you haven't got a Chinese driving license, then you have to have a guide with you all the time. You're traveling. I think there are some restrictions on anyone over 50 driving a vehicle like we have.
They have a really strict age policy, don't they?
They need to open up a little bit more if they want to sort of reap the opportunities of the tourist business. But I suppose at the moment they don't really need to, as this sort of economy is still pretty strong. But maybe it will change over time. But it's difficult. Some countries are just more difficult to travel to than others. So at the moment, Mongolia. We will go. Everyone keeps telling us to go to Morocco, and we will get to Morocco eventually. But at the moment, we prefer sort of the big draw is more the east. We want to spend quite a lot of time probably in Georgia and Armenia and that region. Georgia looks absolutely stunning. There's good skiing, fabulous hiking, lots of off-roading,
And definitely less commercialised. It's not the sort of place you can just sort of nip into Tui and book a holiday to, is it?
It's become more popular, but again, it's more, and the skiing there is more raw than you get in. You can see by the skis, we like our off-piste skiing as well. But
and obviously, you're visiting all these different countries. Do you speak any languages?
Yeah, I think I'm a bit more of a linguist than Mark. I speak French reasonably well. I learned it at school. And then because we have spent a lot of time in Italy, at one point one of our plans was to move to Italy. So, I can speak Italian reasonably well. And then I learned German. We did a German trip, and I did used to work for a German company. And it is a little bit of a myth that, lots of Germans speak English.
Depends where you go, doesn't it?
It really, really does, So, I had a little friend called German in 3 months, and I sort of learned. I got conversational, I was able to hold a very simple conversation in German. And, like with most language, you understand more than you can speak, because you can kind of fill in the pieces.
We always, whatever country you go to, we always learn a little bit.
Even if it's just your basics.
Well, that's
hello,
right.
Please and thank
but
you.
But it's sometimes difficult to recognise your English accent.
And
as soon as you start speaking and try to converse in their language, they just automatically switch into English.
Yeah.
Not the older generation, because they generally don't. But the youngsters, they all want to practice it.
Yeah.
And it's a, there's a danger that a lot of these languages are going to fade and become... Because, I mean, in the Balkans, I mean, a lot of the advertising billboards were in English. They weren't really? In the local languages. They were all in English.
Yeah.
And it worries me that, you know, it's the culture of the countries is so inextricably yeah. linked to the language and,
yeah.
you know, the way that you describe things. And I know the French are sort of... the Brits aren't meant to like the French and everyone sort of moans about them not speaking English and things, but... I'm with them on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's their language.
It's their country, yeah.
They need to protect their language, and so many of these other countries need to be... It's funny that the Welsh and the Scottish, the Gaelic languages are having a resurgence, and a lot of the European languages seem to be going in the opposite direction in favour of... It's probably not English, it's probably more American.
I think Hollywood has a lot to do with it.
I think that's probably why they have that accent when they do speak in English, don't they?
Yeah. No, because, I mean, we met an awful lot of people who said, you know, they'd kind of learned English just from watching, you know, like Netflix or, you know, watching films. Which is amazing, you know, because I always feel very fortunate to be a native English speaker because it's a really complicated language. You know, I mean, I've found, you know, like with the French and Italian, and I think it's probably the same with other Latin languages. I mean, because I speak French, the Italian was quite easy to pick up because many of the words are very similar, the grammar's similar, you know, so I mean, it does give you a basis. I mean, the problems I've had, German, I found much more difficult because, you know, there's very little that I recognised within that language apart from rucksack. I didn't realise that hooker is German for back. So, I mean, it makes, you know, like a backsack. Oh, right, sense, you see.
Yeah.
But there aren't that many things like that in German. So I did find that quite an alien language to learn. And likewise, I mean... Well, Albanian was a little bit tricky. I mean, we managed sort of please and thank you, didn't we, in Albanian? But beyond that, it was a little bit tricky. But remarkably, Romanian is based on Italian. So I can actually read Romanian, but the pronunciation is very different.
Okay.
But, you know, that actually really surprised me when we went to Romania that, you know, I was able to actually read some of the signs and so on and so forth.
And that's a fabulous country.
Romania is amazing.
You said specifically in the truck, so I didn't say Romania. Yeah, but we went there in the caravan, and Romania is love Romania.
Yeah,
Romanian people, Romanian place. It's just
it's
a natural wonderland. It's just there's so much history there. There's so much nature there. The people are lovely. It's a bit like Albania. You know, we were warned about the Romanian gypsies, and we were warned about the Albanian sort of hooligans and mafia. And they're probably two of the nicest. Nationalities that we've come across. Yeah. The Albanian people and the Romanian people love them.
Mm. So you'd go back there then?
We're going to go to... we only probably went to the northern half of Romania.
Yeah.
When we were in there for about 2.5 months last time, so we're going to travel. We'll definitely go to Romania this year, and we'll see some other places that we didn't see last time. Probably spend another couple of months there this year and then drop into Bulgaria, and we'll go to Moldova as long as...
as long as it's safe invaded to do
and,
so.
Down into Bulgaria, into Western Turkey.
So when do you plan to leave the UK again then?
Oh, we're booked on the 29th of May.
Oh, are you? Right, so not long then.
Well, yeah.
I caught you just in time.
You have?
Yeah, 29th of May we're off. So.
Okay, so you've got to travel back down south for ferries?
Yeah, well, we've... I tell you what, the price of... You wouldn't think it for... I mean, how much would you think the ferry costs for this to go from go over to France?
I'm not sure. I believe last time I looked for a car, it was ridiculous.
I think
you've got to be looking at £600, maybe.
If you take the dogs out, £114.
Really?
£114, New Haven Dieppe, yeah.
Is that all for this?
Yeah, for this, £114. The dogs are 70. Mm-hmm. 72, they're £18 per dog for them, so on top of that. But the actual taking the truck over with two passengers, £114, New Haven Dieppe.
That's brilliant.
Considerably more from Portsmouth, Southampton to Caen, Le Havre, I mean, our local one, it would be Poole to Cherbourg, but that's the same again. But no, it's incredibly cheap.
In terms of costing up a holiday, I'm just thinking, like, if you were to go on holiday, anybody going on holiday, you know, going to... across to France in a car, then you've got your your accommodation costs and all of that, you've not even got to worry about that. You've you've just literally just got to put the fuel in and get across the water for £114. Wow.
And then it's just normal. You're just your normal living cost.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a cheap way to live. As I say, I mean, our fuel... I mean, we were in the mountains. We were skiing for 3 months in the winter in the Alps. And and the temperature got down to minus 16 at one point. So for the 3 months that we spent in the mountains, all our heating, cooking, hot water was less than 100 quid.
That's amazing. That is a really cheap way of living.
Mm.
And the benefits that you reap from that as well, like this lifestyle. Yeah. I mean, what does this lifestyle do for you? I mean, in terms, because we mentioned house earlier, and you can't see that, but when we mentioned houses... this fear and this sweat sort of appeared on your head. And
it's freedom, really. I mean, we never know for sure where we're going. We always have plans, but we never know for sure where we're actually going until the morning we leave and we get behind the steering wheel, and then okay, are we doing that or should we do something different? It's kind of the freedom. We don't need to be anywhere. You mentioned the places we go to, which is lovely, but I mean, the best part of the travelling, and I say it to everyone that asks, is the people that we meet on the way through. We meet a lot of, and if you're open and you're polite and you're kind and, you know, all these things, I mean, people tend to, you mirror, light and mirror, you get back
like
what you,
like.
You get back what you put in, and a smile gets you a long way. Well, we met so many really lovely people. You know, doing their own journeys. I mean, when we were in the Balkans last year, there were a lot of people doing long distance riding and walking routes to Istanbul. I think it must be one of the paths they were going from, I think it was Venice to Istanbul. And, you know, we met a lot of really nice people. You know, we rescued a few dogs on our travels, and we met, in Montenegro, you know, there was a lovely Cane Corso, which, you know, initially sort of draws fear because of the size of the things.
Yeah.
But it had been, you know, again, just even the story of that dog, where the local village knew the dog and they sort of looked after it to some degree and put food out for it. But the owner, the man, had died, and he was an elderly fella, and he died, and the wife wasn't able to keep the dog on her own, and she just sort of put it out sort of on the street, but everyone else around the area knew. So, but I think it had been hit by a car or something. It had quite a nasty broken leg, so we managed to get a vet to come out and see it. We sorted that out. But the campsite, the people on the campsite were lovely about it, and they cared about the dog, and they helped us with sorting things out. So, again, you get a bond in dealing with situations like that. But
have you ever had any real mishaps in the van?
No, well...
Not terrible.
I feel like we should touch wood before we start.
Nothing terrible. I mean, you know, you imagine all the things that could possibly go wrong. And I mean, you know, there's a myriad of things, but, you know, generally it tends not to happen. I mean, I think probably the one time, I mean, we've been on some dodgy roads. I must admit, you know, that my heart has been in my mouth sometimes.
A scary road, as I call it.
Very, very scary road.
The Sedlo path in Montenegro was the only one that probably had my... I mean, it was lovely. It was right through the Dermator National Park. It was beautiful, and we travelled through there for probably a day and a half, 2 days, didn't we? And it was absolutely fine. It was just the last 5 miles were interesting. It was a snake of a descent down to some low sort of low bridges. And I mean, when I say snake of a descent, it was a 5-point turn. It took me on one of them. On a steep, and it was 2,000 feet straight down.
It was horrendous.
So, I had to do a 5-point turn to get round one of the bends.
And our brakes overheated.
Our brakes overheated on the way down, so I had to plant the nose of the truck against the...
There was nowhere to
against
stop.
..the rock wall, and just stop there for an hour. Brakes cool down.
Wow. But there was also, some of the road went through tunnels, and being like nearly 4 metres tall, we weren't 100% sure
if you'd fit.
Get through.
I didn't want to go back up that way.
Well, no, we didn't. But anyway, it was all fine, you know. So as I say, you know, it's...
Oh, and then the end of it, we came out and went to the border, and then there was a 12-ton bridge spanning a big gorge, and we weighed 16 tonnes.
Yeah.
And it was about a day going around, but it was single track. Bridge with wooden slats.
Yeah.
Anyway, I make
it. It was a bit of a nail bite. We took a runner.
Just go fast, it'll be fine.
That was over a gorge. Yeah. That was about 100 feet down there.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the span was probably about 50 yards, I suppose.
Yeah, so. No, it was
I was just praying that no one came on at the other end. Yeah, we were crossing from Montenegro to Bosnia.
But on the flip side to that, you've got good ground clearance. You're not going to have to worry about going over little bumps and things. Eh? Yeah. Not like you would with a caravan.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, you know, that's exactly the reason that we bought this truck. You know, I mean,
it's powerful, yeah.
Yeah, on paper, it can cross a 1.5 metre river and climb a 60-degree slope. Mm. I mean, it's a very powerful piece of engineering. But
is it fun to drive?
It is, yeah. It's
heavy. It's
heavy. It's what you would call physical. I mean, the truck I learned in, I just passed my test a couple of weeks ago. So the truck I learned in had automatic gears and power steering and automatic endurance brakes, whereas this, everything is very manual.
Yeah, it is.
You can feel the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, it's got off-road tyres on it, so it is bumpy. Yeah. It's not a...
smooth ride.
No, it's not a smooth ride.
No,
but that's part of the
that's
appeal.
What I like about driving older vehicles as well, because you know, when you didn't have power steering, you actually feel the road in a good way.
You don't get that so much now.
Yeah.
Amazing. The other thing I was going to ask you about is you've written books, haven't you?
I have. Yes. Yeah.
So, do you want to tell us about those?
Yeah, I mean, basically. It came about, I mean, I started up a blog because people asked me about our lifestyle, how we did it. Because, I mean, what I will say to anyone and everyone is, you know, we haven't won the lottery, we're not millionaires, we're just kind of ordinary people.
No, we worked hard with a conventional life and we...
Yeah, and we saved.
We didn't get caught up in the... in that whole sort of scenario of advertising and everything that just finds a way to make you... waste your money on stuff that you don't need, and
like me, though.
bigger houses, bigger cars, loads of stuff. Yeah. And so we managed to sort of rise above that, and as we got better paid jobs, we continued living the same lifestyle, and we put the excess away, and it enabled us to retire at 50.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of the financial equivalent of the handbag theory, because I think people notice that as they get better paid jobs, they never have more money at the end of the month.
That's it.
Because your lifestyle kind of expands to fit what you're getting. So, I mean, partly, you know, the blog was it was about our travels because people were interested in what we were doing. You know, as I say, we sort of disappeared off to France with zero caravanning experience and thought we'll see how that goes. But then also, you know, how we funded it. How, you know, we sort of manage on a day-to-day basis. And then it was a lady who I met on social media who sort of said, oh, you know, I love your writing. You know, she said, even your blog about toilets was a joy to read. Because, of course, toilets, as we say, you know, is something dear to the heart of any man's life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a lovely subject, but, you know, it's one you have to consider. So she said, oh, you should write a book. Well, now, I'd never heard of self-publishing. You know, I mean, I've always enjoyed writing. I would write, you know, whether I had a blog or anything. I mean, I've got years worth of travel journals, you know, just because, you know, I love looking back and, you know, sort of seeing what we used to do and so on and so forth. So I kind of looked into the publishing side of things and sort of wrote my first book, which is called Fur Babies in France, which is From Wage Slaves to Living the Dream, which is exactly what we did. Yeah. It's just like a kind of comical travelogue, which sort of covers how we took the plunge and disappeared off travelling. But like the travelling, I think the writing is quite addictive. I got very good feedback. I've had some lovely feedback about the books, which is really encouraging since it's something I just love to do.
Yeah, it's even better.
So, yeah, since then I've published 5 more.
Oh, wow.
And the one about Romania is, I think it's probably still my favourite. I don't know whether that's coloured by the fact that I just love Romania so much. But that one's won awards. I was actually invited to Bucharest because it was a finalist in the Romania Insider Awards for the best promotion of Romania abroad.
Oh, that's incredible.
Because I kind of wrote that one, you know, Romania got such a bad rap before we went, as Mark said, you know, we were told we were going to be, you know, like kidnapped. I mean, a bit like Albania, kidnapped, scammed and all the rest of it, attacked by wild dogs or bears or wolves or, you know, whatever. And yet what we found was just this absolutely beautiful country with, you know, filled with friendly people. And I kind of wanted to set Romania's record straight.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I sort of relayed, you know, our experiences there. I mean, Romania has 22 UNESCO World Heritage Sites. And there was also a little additional story in that we adopted a dog while we were out there and brought him back with us to the UK. But yeah, as I say, that book has won a couple of awards.
Oh, brilliant.
So, yeah. Yeah, it won the... In 2022, so last year, it got the Reader's Premier Award from Chill With A Book, which is, you know, basically a sort of reviewing site for books and a book discovery site. So, yeah, I was rather pleased with that. So, yes, I'm an award-winning author now.
Especially when it's just a passion of yours.
No, well, exactly. You know, I mean, as I say, I would do it anyway. It's just something that I enjoy. So, I mean, anything else that comes from it is actually just a little bit of a bonus. But probably my favourite thing from writing the books is, you know, when people have come back and sort of said, actually, you've inspired me to do something different, because I do try to take the sheen off, you know, sort of what it takes to do it. I mean, as I say, Mark and I don't feel we're particularly extraordinary people. We're not rich. You know, we just set our minds to doing something. And, you know, I think it is within the grasp of people. And so many people come and say, oh, it's my dream. I mean, I tell it as it is. I don't, you know, sort of sugarcoat it. I mean, there are days where, you know, you do want to kind of curl up in a fetal position, you know, like the Dermator, driving the pass in the Dermator. And I mean, in Romania as well, there was one night we arrived at a campsite that was up a steep hill. The back of the caravan was grounding out. We couldn't make the turn. And then to cap it all, we had to unhitch the caravan to kind of manoeuvre it. And the wheel at the front, which is the only thing that balances the front of the caravan, sheared off.
Oh, no.
So we were there, you know, literally someone was, yeah, I think you were... Mark was holding the front of the caravan because it was basically a 1.5-ton seesaw. but yeah, well, there was a solution. We commandeered a jumbo tin of peaches and the jack and rested the front of the caravan on that. So it was fine. We had a very comfortable night, thank you, once we actually got in. But I mean, those sort of things do happen, and I do relay that in the book. But then again, obviously, you know, they're often the funniest stories.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you just kind of went off on a journey and nothing happened.
Yeah. It's a bit uneventful, isn't it? Yeah.
No, this is it. Because I think the guy who founded Patagonia is a chap called Yvon Chouinard. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly or not. But he said it's not an adventure until something goes wrong. So, yeah, we have
it's plenty of adventures.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't look whose quote was it as well? Life is an adventure or nothing at all.
Oh, that's attributed to a few people, I think, that one. Mm. I thought I'd seen it attributed to Jane Austen, but then I've seen it attributed to other people. Mm. So I'm not sure about that. But, yeah, I mean, that's always kind of how I've lived my life, you know, or both of us, really. I mean, we're very fortunate that we're, you know, very like-minded in that way, that, you know, we're both prepared. I think you're a little bit more careful than me. I'm pretty gung-ho, and it's like, you know, oh, how bad can it be? What's the worst that can happen?
It takes both, though, doesn't it? There's a good balance.
I think you sometimes rein me in from, you know, like my less advisable schemes. But,
Are you writing any books at the moment?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, at the moment, I'm blogging about our Balkan trip. Last year, so the Never Mind the Balkans tour is appearing on my blog, which is worldwidewalkies.com, if anyone is
interested. I was going to say, we'll definitely be sharing these into the show notes and across social media as well.
But I am a little bit behind because we're only in Albania at the moment, so I've got about 6 countries to go, so I need to
get up to date before we leave.
Yeah, that's it.
No pressure then.
By the 30th of May. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, certainly I can move move on a bit with that now. I've had quite a few things to be getting on with while we've been back, not least. As I say, I took my truck test a couple of weeks ago, so I was very focused on making sure that I passed that, since our entire future happiness rested on that. Can we leave on the 30th of May or not? Will you have to retake your test? So, I had to make sure I passed.
Well done for passing.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes.
I mean, I can't park the tiniest of cars, so I don't think I'd be very good with it.
Well, that said, if there's anything in your way in this, I think that's they'll
move. Well, no, it's true. In that sense, it's very easy.
They probably just move, don't they, for you?
Yeah, we've headed in some interesting spots.
We have indeed,
And how do the dogs find it? Have they always lived in here? Have you had them?
We've been travelling since they were a year old. Yeah. Right, so we've been travelling since 2016. So we've been out of the house for 7 years now.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I mean, they look very relaxed.
They do, very.
Yeah. Well, I think the nice thing about travelling overland in a motorhome or caravan or, you know, any kind of recreational vehicle is that for the dogs kind of like routine and familiarity, but, you know, their home doesn't change. The location of the home changes.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like we're in and out of hotel rooms or anything like that, you know. So for them, actually, you know, home just remains the same. It's familiar and, you know, sort of a happy sanctuary. So
And they still get the excitement of all the new smells of when you take them for a walk.
No, exactly. I mean, we usually choose places. I mean, as I say, you know, we're not keen on cities or, you know, sort of busy places. So we tend to, you know, just look for places where there'll be lovely dog walking and, you know, so they have the life of Riley, really. I think one of our friends once said, he said, I want to come back in another life as a dog, he said, but not just any dog.
Your dog.
Yeah, they've definitely got the better end of the deal, haven't they?
Yeah.
Bless them. They love it in here. They definitely look very relaxed up there. Mm. They've been good as well.
Very good. They're gorgeous.
Yeah. So when are you heading? So you've got you leaving on the 30th of May. Will you hit it in one down there, or have you got places to stop on?
We're going to take it. It sounds really churlish to say, but we've been really busy in the UK. We've had lots of jobs to do. So we're going to have a holiday before we start our travel.
Oh, very good. Yeah, don't blame
that
you.
That sounds awful, doesn't it? So we're going to park up in Brittany, because we love Brittany. So we're going to park up in Brittany for a couple of weeks. Just so we know a place where you can, there's loads of cycling, loads of windsurfing, right? Yeah. Park right by the water. Literally, we'll sort of jump out the back of the truck and our feet will be wet. Oh. So so we'll park up there a couple of weeks and then, just take it as we go, really.
See,
if we like a place, we stop a little bit longer. If we don't, then we move on. So there's that. Our only limiting factor is we've got to be out of Schengen after
that's
90
it
days.
Yeah, that's the only
apart
thing
from
so
that, each day as it comes.
Yeah, so when does that bring you back to the UK then?
We'll be away a year again, I should think.
Yeah,
we've just got to be back for the MOT. It's all right, once it's 40 years old, we haven't got to come home for an MOT then. It's MOT free after 40 years.
Oh, brilliant.
So it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it?
Yeah, the older it is, the less safety aspects they need to look at.
Yeah, it's a classic vehicle then, and I think the psyche is that you just...
You look after it yourself anyway.
Having a vehicle like that,
you're
going to look after it properly.
Yeah.
Which we do. I mean, we have it regularly checked.
Well, you have to, don't you, really?
Yeah, we can't afford it not to be working properly. So
one thing I didn't ask, has it got a name?
it's the beast.
Beast. Well, that is quite apt.
I think basically because it is. I mean, you know, people come up, you know, so often and sort of go, oh, you know, that's a real beast, and it kind of is. I mean, we kind of fell in love with it for that reason, because it's got a classic bull nose. It's not, you know, sort of a sort of flat-fronted lorry.
It definitely looks menacing,
doesn't it? It's got the bull nose. And because it is just so big, you
know. I mean, we've got a lot of mates with lorries, and most of their lorries are... They're probably 10-ton, I should think, aren't they?
Yeah.
So this is... Babies. This is 26-ton sitting at 16-ton.
Yeah.
It's too big. It's too big, really, for the overland journey. But we're not really a conventional overlanders. A lot of these people are sort of seeking out difficult terrain and things like that. We're on a journey, and you know, if it means we've got to go over some difficult terrain to get to where we want to go to, then we'll do it. But we'll pick the easiest route. I'm not seeking out difficult roads.
No, it sounds like you've had your fill of difficult roads with that particular 5 mile section.
Yeah. If we've got to go on a difficult road, we'll go on a difficult road, and we've got the vehicle for it. But we're not seeking out the adrenaline of difficult drives. Yeah, we just want to get to remote places. And,
amazing. Well, I think for me, thank you very much first of all for chatting to us. And most of all, thank you for letting us come into your home.
Yeah.
It's been an experience just seeing this.
It really is. It's so cosy, and yeah, you might have to kick us out, actually.
Where can we sleep?
You're very welcome to stay. It's been such a pleasure to meet you and chat to you. So, no, thank you.
I mean, as a parting message, I'd just say sort of, I mean, we're not 60, I'm 60. We're sort of similar age, but I mean, you know, you just got to sort of, so many people of our age and even younger kind of get caught up in sort of the routine and sort of just stop engaging and thinking about sort of the way that you can live your life. And I feel that 60 years old, our life's still accelerating and we're learning new
things.
Sounds
like it, yeah.
And you can do it, you know, you don't just be content with the way things as they are. You don't need to sort of spend a fortune, you just need to be a little bit brave and you know, live more than one life in your lifetime, you know.
Yeah,
love that.
Definitely that is that. There you go, there's one quote. That one you can put your name on.
Yeah
I like that. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. It's been absolutely fantastic to meet you properly, and also have a look inside your home.
No, well, you're very welcome. It's been our absolute pleasure.
What an incredible way to live. As soon as I got home, I was searching the internet for van and truck conversions, if only just to dream. Jackie and Mark were awesome hosts, and we are truly grateful for the opportunity to see inside their home. You can find the link to Jackie's blog in the show notes, where you can see pictures of the beast and their adventures. Now, as you know, Claire has come on board to help with the podcast, and I want to ask you for some help if I can. In June, Claire is walking a marathon in memory of her dad and to fundraise for St. Rocco's Hospice, who cared for him and supported Claire and their family. It costs them around £12,000 a day to provide care and support, so every penny helps. Times are hard, but if you can, please spare any change, no matter how small, and donate to get Claire through the 26.2-mile marathon walk. Please see the link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio. If you'd like to support the podcast by becoming an official Patreon supporter, you can grab yourself some cool stickers and access to Backstage whenever we record the podcast. Any Patreon pledges up until Claire's marathon walk will be donated to the fundraiser for St. Rocco's Hospice. Please tell your friends about the podcast, share far and wide, and we'll continue to bring you your fortnightly dose of all things outdoors. That is all for this episode and this series. Keep putting one foot in front of the other, and we'll see you very soon.